in my opinion. Yeah. That's not really coaching.
You're right, because the plan gonna change.
Because fatigue breeds injuries. If a player's fatigued, they mentally not sharp. So it means they're not feeling where their body is in space, pushing too much, not pushing enough, and you're just asking for an injury.
Yeah.
Like you said, at that point, we praying for luck more than success, you know, and that I definitely agree with you on that. Because
You get in your car and drive back home for that hour, you drive that sucker 120 miles per hour all the way home, something gonna happen. If it don't happen today, it's gonna happen somewhere down the road.
Yeah. On the resume, as you're talking through it, you know, from Grambling, I know you went on to be a speed coach at University of Nevada, assistant strength and conditioning coach at the University of Mississippi, Ole Miss, as some know here in the SIP. Then you were the director of sports performance at the University of Oregon in 22 and 23, and now we got you here, state as director of speed in present day. And, you know, some of the highlights as we've been going through this, I was seeing if he's going to get to the highlights, some of the highlights of what you've done at Grambling State University, going 20-3 over two seasons and then going undefeated in that last season before you left and winning the national championship. Also taking Ole Miss to being in the 21 season to being ranked in the top 20 of plays of 20 yards and 20 plus yards, being a top 20 team in that respect. And then he also was a state champion at Starville High School in that time, as well as, you know, helping a softball team win the 2012 national championship. And have you coached a gold medalist?
No.
Haven't?
I helped Coach TJ train him in the weight room.
Okay.
TJ's strength coach over at Bama.
That is.
I helped him in the weight room with that guy. But, like, just
pure coach
speed training, nothing like that. Nah. Mm-hmm. But I have opportunity to been around one. Mm-hmm. So that was a blessing.
I was going to say, man, I mean, I can tell that success has followed you. Definitely know that you know what you're doing in the arena of speed and sports performance. And it's still kind of a new field, you know, especially here in Mississippi, getting kids and coaches to buy in is still kind of some of the same things that you said that you went through. Mm-hmm. I know I deal with, you know, getting coaches to buy into speed training, getting coaches to buy into sports performance and how that affects an athlete as far as the grand scheme of things and polishing the athlete as far as getting the most from that athlete's potential. Is there a secret sauce to the success? Like, what's the secret, if there is one?
I can't say it's a secret. It's like I said earlier, I just had a way to connect with athletes and people in general, you know, because when I look a lot like them, and we've been through a lot of the same similar things. Not as severe as some of them may have been through, you know. You see a lot of kids, especially Mississippi, come from different backgrounds.
Right.
But, you know, I can relate to a lot of them. If it wasn't me, it was my good friend, best friend, homeboy, right, or wherever it was. So I, from talking with them about their situation, or wherever it may be, you know, just getting that knowledge younger growing up, then realize, like I said, what it was for. Mm-hmm. But just being able to connect with people, man, and understand and being genuine and real. You know, I think now, you know, where I'm 46, but where I understand, even with myself, kids don't like to be lied to.
You're right. That's a big thing.
The key. Once you lie to them, you lose them. So I'm always tell you the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether you want, it's the hard truth, or you can handle it, or you want to believe it.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that some would take it a certain way. So I'm not a psychologist. I can't come up the right way or how to present it to make sure a feeling don't get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
But I present it, and we'll come together and let them understand, like, hey, it's love. This is not bashing you, because I have a 22-year-old.
Right.
So I have experience with having to understand how to balance of being a hard dad, the iron fist, but yet be able to see the body language and the response the next day or the next day and be like, hey, now come here. Look, this is why I had to be this way. You know what I'm saying? It's very important, and try to paint a picture. You know what I mean? So you take situations, if you don't listen, all right, what's the worst case scenario? This.
Mm-hmm.
All right, now, let's work backwards. To not let this happen, what do we have to do? Now, a lot of times they understand that. Okay, if I don't go to class, because I didn't, this is what I got. All right, what could I have done different? And understand that the right answer sometimes is hard to do, and it makes you uncomfortable. So if that's make you uncomfortable, that's probably the thing to do. Mm-hmm. So you just got to go tie your lace your shoes up, tie them tight, and we got to go through and do it, because you have made one bad decision to get out another bad decision mm-hmm. that you made. And now you find yourself all the way over here, and you get that feeling of hopeless. I can't do it. Yeah, you mm-hmm. can. It's just going to take a sacrifice. It might be 6 months, 3 months, 6 months, a year, right. 2 years, depending on how long you keep going with those bad decisions. Mm-hmm. So,
I think I definitely agree with you on that. I think that, you know, getting kids to buy in, I think buy-in just comes with them trusting you.
Exactly.
And you have to develop that. I think a lot of athletes that I train over time, you know, the most successful has always been trust, you know, from the gate. Like, hey, this is where we at. This is what we're trying to get to. Mm-hmm. This is what it's going to take to get there. So, like you said, engineering that process for the athlete, walking them through it, you know, and that comes with, I think, when you've been through it and you get that firsthand experience, they know that you've had that experience versus you trying mm-hmm. to take somebody else's experience and say, well, you know, I look at this athlete mm-hmm. and they did this, they did that. You know, when you can say, well, you know, this is how I did it and it didn't really work, you know, that goes a lot further, and it goes a long way into helping the athlete buy into what you're saying. Because what we're doing as coaches is, you know, we're trying to, and I got this from Coach Saban, so it ain't no original. But we're trying to invoke human performance to go beyond what they think they're capable of mm-hmm. on a consistent basis. And so I think that really does cause you to be successful. Now, does it make you successful on Coach Beckham's level? I don't really know, but it does bring success for sure. You know, so what, in your opinion, what does a successful player, the mindset of a successful player look like?
It's just being able to understand you got to come in and put in extra work. Mm. You know, I deal with football, but so it's like, okay, I got to understand what's going on the film. What am I seeing? Because mm-hmm. film don't lie. So you can sit here and say, man, I'm doing what the coach said I need to do, but we go back and watch the film, you're not really doing it. Mm-hmm. Or if you're doing it, you're not doing it on a consistent level. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's what it boils down to. You know, right. Just you got to put the extra work in. You got to trust your coach that he's going to tell you the truth mm-hmm. and that it's not personal. Because at the end of the day, it's a performance business, right? Mm-hmm. You don't win, especially now, you get 2 or 3 years.
Right.
Depending on how bad you lose in the 2 year, right. determines if you get the third year, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
If you lost the first two, you know what I'm saying? So we're trying to put the best guys out there, and we're always trying to out-recruit you.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
if I only have one really good guy at corner, but everybody else like shouldn't be here, then you're not going to have competition in the room.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to get stacked that room, where position is stacked that room, to promote competition. Now mm-hmm. you compete every single day. You have no day to walk in and, man, I don't feel it today.
Yeah.
Or my girl made me mad today. You can do that, but if that room stacked, kind of like you said, over, you got mm-hmm. your quotes from Saban, like I've been over there, that room is stacked. You got another guy in the next 2 years going to be a first round draft pick. So mm-hmm. if you create that competition, then you got to do the extra. If not, now you jump in the transfer portal.
Yeah.
Everybody don't win in the transfer portal, even before the NIL type stuff. Like in the original, you leave. Like you can leave, but you have no film.
Mm-hmm.
But there's other guys there too that's mm-hmm. hungry, but you're not hungry. So you go to that school, it's the same problem. Then you got to look in the mirror, because the only thing that's the same is you.
Mm.
So you're the problem. What did you do to put yourself to be successful? If I ask you a question, I get the rambling sometimes.
No, you good. I mean, because what you just said, I mean, it painted a clear picture for me, because I think, again, I'm going to use myself for example. We first started talking, you were like, how long you been in this business? How long you been doing this, then the third? And I would say, too, you know, that this year, due to some of the competition, it forced me to be my best self.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been days where, like, I'm like, man, I don't feel like doing this, man. I don't want to study today. I don't want to read any research articles. I don't even want to work out on my own. I don't want to do nothing. Like, it's cold, the bed feeling warm, it's feeling good, and I don't feel like doing nothing. But I think, like you said, just competition. I think competition does two things. It's either going to bring out the best in you, or it's going to bring out the worst in you. Mm-hmm. And I think it's all a mindset and just how you're driven, how you're wired, and what your level of focus is on that. I mean, that's my two cents on it. You know, I see a lot of people crumble under competition. You know, especially when you get guys in, you know, we'll talk about the collegiate level. When you get guys in from small town, small school, and then you get up in the Big Pun, and we got this backdrop. We look in the weight room right now. You get guys down there, and it's time to compete on a daily basis. It's time to give your best on a daily basis. A lot of people crumble under that pressure because the weight hasn't just been, I guess the weight hadn't been there a whole lot.
Yeah, that and you wasn't prepared. Mm. Did you, if you know you're going to compete, did you prepare? Did you go in the playbook?
Mm-hmm.
Did you go to sleep the night before? Did you hydrate? Did you fuel for wherever it may be? Mm-hmm. If you got to go out there and we're going to do 110s, you got to compete against a guy, wherever it may be, it's about your preparation to get ready to compete.
Mm.
So if you didn't get prepared to compete, how can you? You have nothing to fall back on. You didn't train. So that's kind of like you always fall back to the level of your training. If you only train this far and the other guy's training this far,
right,
how are you going to compete?
Right.
You just don't have that next level. And you have guys that go and do things, but they didn't do it at the top level they should do it at. Now you put them in that, like you say, compete. I've done it to kids before.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, man, you're not really running those 110s the way you need to run it. You have more, but you're just selling for, oh, I'm going to make the time.
Mm-hmm.
Because you had made that time with 2 extra seconds. So you didn't push yourself.
Yeah.
Now I put you in that situation where they're always going to say, man, I can keep up with them. I can do what you want to do. You can't tell me that because what I'm going to do, okay, I'm going to show you.
Right.
Now I'm going to put you in a situation where you got to compete.
Mm-hmm.
Then you find out I can't compete. So at Grambling, I'll never forget this. What exactly the reason why I'm saying that example. Our starting quarterback, he could do whatever. He was good. And he showed up on the field every game. But when it came to conditioning, he always stayed in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't ever push himself to get in that front half. So I challenged him one day. He couldn't do it when he needed to do it.
Yeah.
At that point, everything changed for him because I had to show you that it's not as easy as you think.
Mm-hmm.
So people can see it until – they test you, and then you find out. Like you said, yeah, I've been studying. So you got to go take that English test.
Mm-hmm.
Dang, I made a C.
Right.
He wasn't ready.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Because you have to learn it. You have to learn all that stuff and be prepared for how she may ask that question. You may do know the answer, but she asks you in a way where, dang, you can't think for real. Like, okay, let me work through it because there's some things you need to fill the gap in to get you to that answer, but you missed that little piece.
Mm-hmm.
So now you make C's.
And you know what? I'll tell you this. It's like, I was talking to my wife the other night, and I said, man, I think the strongest thing that anybody can say is like, man, I messed that up. I did this wrong. And the reason I'm saying that is that that story came about because I was sitting back looking at my training over the years. Of course, you know, we can go and we can say, oh, man, I've been doing it for 9 years. That's your length of time you've been doing it. I mean, that's your experience in the game. That doesn't mean that you became an expert at it. That doesn't mean that you improved in it. That just means you've been doing it for 9 years. And so I sat back and I really looked at training and I looked at, you know, some of the things I did that worked well, some things I did that didn't work well. And I said, I think a lot of times, well, not think, but I said, I know that a lot of times when I was prepared, my athletes came out better. Now, I had success with a lot of athletes, but I can't say like, you know, some athletes, I'm like, man, what did you do to make them better? I really don't know, man.
Yeah.
I just kind of threw spaghetti at the wall and seen what worked. But then like now it's a maturity in it. So now it's, oh, well, you know, if I do this contrast, I'll train it for this athlete, they need to be more explosive. Well, that's how we can get them explosive without taxing the central nervous system or taxing their immune system, or they experiencing chronic fatigue because we just going hard every single day. So this athlete isn't recovering. They aren't sleeping right. The sleep patterns, stuff like that are off. But because I was focusing on one aspect of just, oh, we need to be fast. Mm-hmm. I need speed. You know, that works. But then I need to see, well, what goes into this whole picture? And once you see,
you
like you just said, once you figure out the whole picture and you can keep studying that whole picture, now I'm an expert at it. Not only are you an expert, but you've gained that confidence because you've trained yourself.
Yeah.
And that comes from, you know, self-discipline and training on your own time. Like you said, the extra work.
So I call it experience. Because like you can know all that, but you don't have enough experience to be able to figure out, I did this. You can reflect back and then you can figure it out. But once you can do all that, man, and go with your experience, from what you did over here, it worked, but I was lucky. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Oh, he was just
that's called a spade. I'm just lucky.
He was a good athlete, so it didn't matter if you said, "Hey, man, grab the and all."
Yeah.
Oh, he got better. Certain kids can do certain things that other kids just can't do. So, like I say, with that experience, man, with time and can be truthful with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Like, man, I messed that up. I don't know how I got that. I don't know why he didn't pull a hamstring. Because I did 500 yards of high-speed runs. Like, what? After I did posterior chain the day before. What? You did heavy RDLs. You went out and sprint, and you made it out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you was lucky. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So all the experience, man, all that too come with that. So,
Well, let me ask you this question. Do you think coaches can make athletes slower?
You can't. You can't. If you don't do the right things or you do too much. If example, if I go acceleration day, let's say I'm doing sled pushes, and you're doing sled pushes all the time for weeks, and you don't ever let them open up and run fast to learn how to apply it the right way, then yes, you can get slower because that's a lot of time on attention. You know what I mean? So you want to be able to have that. You want to be able to be quick with it, the regular force development, whatnot. So you can do that. Like, it can happen. And some people say, you get heavier, you get slower. My experience at Oregon wasn't, I you know, I argue that. On average, we got 15, talking skill and combos. That's who I mainly dealt with. So on the average, they gained, we did the research before I left and got all my stuff to put in my portfolio. So on the average, they got 15 to 20 pounds heavier and gained anywhere from a half a mile to a mile faster. So I think it had a lot to do with how we planned everything out and how I approached it on the field. Yeah, you can get stronger, you get twitchy in the weight room, but if you can't go outside and put them in an environment where they now have to apply that, then you're not going to get the full rewards. You'll get some, but not full. But yeah, you can definitely make them slower if, like you say, you don't look at the big picture of what you're doing. I think once you get experience, you start to understand how to structure your days, then you start to have a little bit more success than just throwing it on the wall.
Yeah, because I think you, I think you just made a good point about, you know, knowing how to stack those things together, but then also, you know, looking at your data points. I know you had a lot of guys that run 20 plus miles per hour. That's something I was telling my guy on the way up here. You know, I was like, man, you know, you got some really fast athletes, but you know, I think that you also alluded to the point too within the sports performance and strength and conditioning community about athletes moving heavyweight slow versus moving weight fast. I think if you, if anybody that's a coach gets lost in the Instagram or the Twitter or anything like that, get lost in that sauce, you see a lot of coaches going back and forth about, no, you shouldn't lift more than 60% of your one rep max. Oh, yeah, they shouldn't go to 90%, or they should only lift weights fast, or they should only lift weights, you know, if they lift heavy all the time, it's going to make them slower. Things like that, which you just dispel some of that by saying, you know, an athlete gains the right size, they get bigger, and they get faster. Well, you want on that end. And the only way that, not the only way, but one of the common ways or tried and true ways for athletes to gain size and muscle density is by pushing the muscles. Like, that's the only way you can do it.
You gotta have volume. You gotta overload them.
Yeah, you gotta overload them and put them under and try them through volume training. But you know, I'll say like what and as a speed coach, you know, I've talked about this kind of like at the beginning. What is your role within the strength and conditioning staff?
Well, I still have the weight room portion. We still have groups like me and Coach Shaw. We have the skills together because those are your. That's your biggest group because you got to have a lot of wide receivers. You got to have a lot of DBs. Depending on, you may have five DBs on the field, so you got to have more of them.
Right.
That's the big number. So I still train them out there, right? Mm-hmm. So you still got that responsibility. So I guess you can say I specialize, you want to call it that, because being a speed coach just happened. Mm-hmm. I went seeking to be a speed coach, but I kept going down the rabbit hole of it and fell in love with track. So I got on the speed side of it. So now I do speed outside. So Oregon only did speed. Here with Coach Shaw, because we've been working together, we talked about a lot of different things as far as field work, as far as change of direction, things like that. So now I'm responsible for all the field work. So I've got speed days, and then we got our deceleration COD day, change of direction. So I'm responsible for that. So now I have to design not only the speed, which is I've been doing it for a while now. I don't like saying this anymore, but I always say it, that's easy.
Yeah.
So now football is about deceleration and change the direction and reaccelerating too. So now I'm putting my emphasis on that part of the game. I like to call it game speed because you got to take a situation, evaluate it, and make a decision. How I make that decision. So now I got to be able to be clean out my break. I got to be able to stop better than you and get out that break better than you. So now that is where, for me, I'm taking my game to, you know what I mean? So I moved to another planet, and on that planet, that's where I'm working.
Right.
So you can have a speed plan, like that's whatever with me now. Not trying to sound that way or arrogant, some people may say, but it's pretty simple. I'm a technical guy when it comes to speed. Mm-hmm. So now I'm moving to a technical guy when it comes to COD. Mm-hmm. And football have a lot of different variables, different positions. You get caught in different situations. So you can be technical, but you got to understand how technical you need to be. So when I train, I try to put them in all those different situations so they can be successful. Rather, your shoulder pad was high when you came out your break, mm-hmm. so you're not going to get out your break fast. So now that means you got to accelerate. So that means you got to put those triples together, mm-hmm. and get out of there to reaccelerate and catch up. You know, so if your shoulder pads are high, you're not going to really have a drive phase. So mm-hmm. now, because you're not going to be able to project, now you top it, you more top end mechanic trying to get out. Mm-hmm. So now we have to talk about, if you get caught in that situation, how do you get out? So we'll go through that and teach them that and talk about all those things. So, you know, sometimes I can go too in depth and think too hard on it, but I get critical with myself and try to prepare the guys. So, mm-hmm. so that's kind of where I'm at out there.
Yeah, being a student of what is required of the athlete is going to help you be so much better as a coach, mm-hmm. than just purely focusing on, like you said, just pure speed, pure change direction, purely deceleration. And, you know, I'm going to call it spade a spade. A lot of guys get caught up in the straight line, mm-hmm. straight line speed. And honestly, football, sports in general, is not played in straight lines unless it's a track athlete. And so I think that sometimes, like you said, you can go so far into the rabbit hole, you outthink yourself. Or mm-hmm. I say sometimes, you know, with basketball, you can outcoach yourself. And you put yourself in kind of murky waters or rough, kind of rough decisions, I guess you say. Where you're trying to figure out, how do I get this kid to decelerate fast while also breaking his own personal records, reaccelerating out of the break? So if you run a dig route, you know, how do I get him to come into that cut, not stay too long, and also get back on the path and get back into the drive phase again if he's coming across the field or what have you, or sitting down in the zone coverage and then reaccelerating once he gets the ball, catches the ball, and then goes back out into the field. You know, a lot of those things are what makes great coaches. The same thing in basketball. I work with basketball athletes, and I'm sitting here just thinking about replaying in my head. You know, I got to think about, well, how many times in the game do you jump? How many times in the game are you running from the, I guess I call it the landing strip and dunking on somebody? Mm-hmm. What stress is that taking on your knees? In a practice, how many times are we running, getting a rebound and running the floor? How much stress is that putting on the bones of the lower half of the body? And then how do we complement what's happening in the weight room to what's going to happen on the court? How do we help you recover faster? How do we put you in a position that you can be the best athlete? Because the way I look at it is, everybody is going to start off week one, week two, week three, kind of the same. It's once we get to midpoint of the season and we get to the end of the season, we don't want to drop off to a point to where all that work we put in over the summer, all that work we put in all season, it drops off to the point it looked like we didn't do anything. Mm-hmm. We want to still sustain that and go and carry that on. Because that's what makes you great. That's what makes a great mm-hmm. team. It's a team that's able to sustain, stay injury-free as much as possible. You're going to get little injuries, but stay injury-free as much as possible and be available. You know, that's the way I look at it.
So, yeah, because you have to look at the big picture, like, say, the stress. You got to look at what you're doing in the weight room, what you're doing on there. So, like you're saying, that first 3 weeks, everybody going to kind of be ready to go the same. Mm-hmm. That workload and all that player load is going to start to catch up, right? Because as you go, the intensity climbing, the volume climbing. Mm-hmm. So now you have to, from the experience, you have to look at them. Okay, they're looking fatigued today. They're college students, so they're not going to sleep. So you can say you need 8 hours of sleep, or tell me what athletes get 8 hours of sleep. None of them. So you can stop crying about that, because it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Because of, with football, you got to watch film. Even if it's off season, you got to come get the film in. You got to still do all that. Then you got class. Then you got study hall. Mm-hmm. Then you got to figure out how to get the evening in. You still training. So it's like, that's going to happen. They're not sleeping. So now you have to look at them. Like you said, you still trying to climb. So with me, some days, hey, like being coach, y'all had a skill. So it's like, coach, look at them. They're tired. They don't have no pep in their step. So we may go today. We may, hey, turn the music on before we get started. Mm-hmm. All right, let's get them up a little bit. Mm-hmm. We know they're fatigued. So now we come out. Now, Sean, this is what we're going to do. We're going to push them for a few reps. We're going to see miles by hour, what can we get today? Mm-hmm. So, boom, we get it. Might get it in the second rep. I may have 6 reps prepared. Mm-hmm. After that, I'll cut it. Now we do more dribble series type stuff. If we work, we'll do that regard. So we get dribble series in, just drill, drill, drill. Now, just like track, I can't run, you're going to have a hammy. So if they fatigue, something's going to go wrong. So I have to pull back and be smart, because if they get a hammy, now that's anywhere from 3 weeks to over a month.
You're sitting, you're sitting down. Yeah, you're sitting down.
Right. So they're not training. That's not helping. Like in this case here, new coach, new team. Well, got new guys coming in. Everybody jockeying to show the coach who they are and solidify their spot on the depth chart when spring get here. If you're not here for spring, you can't get your show the coach who you are and put yourself in a position to go into fall camp.
Right.
You see what I'm saying?
Right.
So it's easy for me outside to bag back. Because I'm not going to necessarily say, oh, some people do it. Oh, I got to get my speed. I'm not changing anything. I'm not like that. Because I know at the end of the day, it's still about playing football.
Yeah, you got to be flexible.
Because you can be fast, but you don't know your football. It don't matter, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or whatnot. So I'd be smart, because if I let them recover week four, guess what I can do? We can call that a D-load. So now what happened? Week five, I can push again.
Yeah.
Now, if I want to be smart, I may push a little bit more. So I may slide my scale where I want to be back a little bit. And if I end up just using miles per hour per se, if I leave at 21, I could have got a 21.5 or 22, then cool, I'm gonna wait okay with the 21, right? Because at the end of the day, that's still fast. So I'm not chasing to try to break this record, because coach is not gonna give me a raise or give me more money because, oh, you got everybody at 23.
Yeah,
but half of them hurt.
Yeah.
Or they can't participate in spring practice. So, you know, I'm kind of over the place trying to keep it together.
Yeah,
but
I'm taking what I'm saying. Yeah, it's one is flexibility.
And I don't have an ego.
Yeah.
Let's put it like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't, some guys have egos in this industry and they don't want to give, and that causes problems. You know what I mean? So with me, I understand it.
Yeah, and to me, I think whenever you stick to the plan, whenever you stick to your plan exactly, to me, that's not really coaching. I mean, I'm just, in my opinion, that's not really coaching.
You're right, because that plan going to change.
Because, yeah, because fatigue is going, fatigue breeds injuries. If a player's fatigued, they mentally not sharp. So it means they're not feeling where their body is in space, pushing too much, not pushing enough, and you're just asking for an injury.
Yeah.
Like you said, at that point, we praying for luck more than success, you know, and that I definitely agree with you on that.
Because you get in your car and drive back home for that hour, you drive that circle 120 miles per hour all the way home, something gonna happen. If it don't happen today, it's gonna happen somewhere down the road. You know, rather it's 2 weeks later, like, man, why my motor is not
smoking?
Well, you know, you drove from Star for 120 miles per hour for no reason. That's why
you just, you
know,
push what I mean?
So every time, sometimes it don't get you today, but it's gonna get you down the road.
Okay. I used to have kids doing power cleans after practice. And, like, I would hear him be like, oh, man, my wrist. I'm like, oh, no, we got to do this, man. Because, you know, we're talking about Olympic lifting, things like that. You know, that was my mindset at that point was like, no, man, it's Olympic lift, triple extension. You need this because it's going to mimic you making a tackle, mimicking you jumping for a pass, this and that, whatever. But then it's like you learn, well, yeah, that's great when they not punching all day or they not locking up with somebody all day. Let's find the variations. Let's find how we can build and get the same thing from something that ain't taxing the wrist, that's not taxing them mentally, things like that. Because if you, like, let's say you go to a local high school, if they got a lift after practice, they not trying to think about, man, this 300 pounds I got to get up off my chest. It should be, you want to push as much as you can, but they come out the field, you be like, all right, we need to be able to get through it. We need to be able to maintenance and maintain while keeping the same, while keeping a level of intensity. You know, you're going to turn it down for the season a little bit, but keeping a level of intensity that's going to keep you, you know, maintenance, that's what we're trying to do in the weight room. We ain't trying to go in here and set records, you know what I'm saying, in season. You know, that's just my vantage point of what I've seen in high school. But, you know, if you would say that to me 7 years ago, I was like, nah, man, we're about to push it a little bit.
Let's take what you just said. We're talking, because that's what, before you even hit that topic about high school,
yeah,
in my mind, I'm finna talk about high school.
Mm-hmm.
About different variation and how you have to look at things.
Mm-hmm.
So you're talking about coming in after practice in high school,
mm-hmm.
and you want to power clean because of your reasons, right?
Yeah.
So now let's take another step. So if they're coming out to practice, their nervous system blow, right? They're not, can't focus on
it's
that.
Far.
Right? So now you want the triple extension. What's wrong with clean pulling? I can still get my heavy weight.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
That I need, but I don't have to worry about this part. I don't have to worry about they tweaking something because they're not focused and catch the ball out here and have to throw it and throw it on somebody's foot.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
because
they're
not paying attention. But you see what I'm saying? So there's a lot of different ways to do that. Or I had high school coaches talking to me about, hey, man, I want to power clean this and this and that and that. I remember high school, they don't teach power clean.
Mm-mm.
So now, are you getting the benefits of the power clean? Yeah, your ego can say, yeah, we power clean. We got 300 pounds. Yeah, my guy's doing that. But now from being, this is me. It's not everybody. It's just me. From being on the collegiate setting, I just need you to teach him the basic.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, your linemen and stuff, like I say, my opinion, some people may argue, yes, they got to be strong. Get them strong.
Yeah, yeah.
But I want you to teach them how to lift.
Mm-hmm.
All right? Because if you take the skill, guys, it's about a skill.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to solely recruit them off their skill.
Right.
We're not going to recruit them on how much they lift, how much that. We're going to do that when they get here,
mm-hmm.
if they had a skill set to play the position. So I feel like sometime in high school, you take a – they'll call, hey, man, what are y'all doing at Mississippi State? Send me a program.
Mm-hmm.
You send them the program, which I don't even send – I don't even write programs
yeah.
out. I don't even send it home to kids when we sign them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't do it because, one, you don't know if they got a gym. Two, you don't know what they have. So that's a waste of my time to me.
Right, right.
You see what I'm saying? Just run, kind of get yourself in shape,
mm-hmm.
and we'll take care of the rest when you get here.
Mm-hmm.
But if they just go clean pool, you can't teach the power clean, so why are you doing the power clean?
Yeah.
Learn how to do the clean pool. I'm still getting my triple extension.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting everything I need, and I'm moving – I'll move more heavier weight clean pulling than I will with power clean, because if you can't catch it,
mm-hmm.
you can't power clean it.
Because to me, a lot of kids I see it's straight muscle ups.
Exactly.
Like, the power clean, it ain't a power clean.
Oh, you get there, you leave your heels back.
Yeah, I use brute strength to get it up.
Yeah.
Like, that's
so ego wise, yeah, okay, whatever. Ego wise. But in the reality of how much better did they get,
mm-hmm.
you left a lot on the table.
Yeah, I talked to – I don't know if you've met him. He does baseball actually here at State. Coach Hunter Lakey.
I talked with him. He wasn't in when I went in.
Yeah.
Seen some of the assistants over there, but
yeah,
haven't met him yet.
Yeah, he's a good guy. I talked to him, and one of the things we kind of agreed on is, like, whenever I get an athlete, you know, I ask what your max is, but I ain't going to start with it. I like to start with straight bar, see if you can get the movement pattern, and then we start adding weight. Or we can get up to your weight from there.
You better not start here, I'll fire you.
Hey, man, I want to see.
I'll fire you.
I want to see from the front, from the ground up, feet up, what you look like moving that with nothing on you.
Yeah, nothing
at all. I mean, because like again, in my experience, what I've seen is a lot of guys come in and say, hey, I bench press 300. All right, I'm just going to use 300 for instance. I ain't lying, I ain't look. But I bench press 300. All right, well, let's see it. Either you getting this, or I'm seeing that shoulder, I'm seeing that winging going on, and I'm like, man, you really, if you put 20 more pounds on your shoulder going, and, you know, in the high school weight room, I know you probably see it, especially, you know, now it's becoming more popular, but when they put up the hype video, we had squat day, and this kid hit 700, and it was a quarter squat, I'm like, man, I hate to be the person.
Because you can't train on that because your number's wrong.
I hate to be the person to bust your ego, but I'm like, man, that ain't even a squat.
Nah.
Like, you're not working on anything. So, you know, that's, again, my experience on it.
So, once you get here, we're going to look at it and be like, man, we got to break this all the way down.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we're going to go 135 bench. We're going to show you how to sit up on the bench, how to put your feet down, how to set your shoulders down, back,
mm-hmm.
whatever, how to hold your wrists and knuckles and all that to the skin. Don't break them, whatever. So, we're going to break all that down anyway. So, we're going to start light, because if we fix it now, we can go.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can do the 300 and it's,
yeah,
instead of this.
Yeah.
That's just, like you said, you want to see heavy weight. That's ego.
Mm-hmm.
So now you're putting the weight on. Yeah, you're doing it, but
yeah,
that don't help nobody. One ain't going to hurt something.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So you just have to, like I said, with high school, just teach. If you teach them right, you'll get to a comfortable number you want to be at.
Mm-hmm.
Because the last thing you want to do is hurt somebody in the weight room. Us, we'll get fired.
Yeah.
So we got to do it the right way. So I think that's the difference, like you talked about earlier about parents, like what they look for. Like, that's why you got to pay attention to all that. See if they have the search. Because
mm-hmm.
now you're showing them that they spent time and have some kind of knowledge. What is their experience?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, this is their first time? All right, I might give you a try for a trial if we're doing stuff outside, like speed
right.
or whatever. I'll see. And I'll see how you're structuring if it makes sense. But you always, like I say, simple better. Don't be in a hurry, because you may take 2 or 3 weeks, but you're going to get to where you're going. Better, like you're saying with the power clean. Yeah, you can get to 225, but guess what? You're not gonna get past 225.
Mm-hmm.
So what was the point? of going that fast. So you done spent that 225 and you mad. And if you're high school, the level of understanding and coaching and being a professional, now you start yelling at the kid. Mm-hmm. Now you start saying certain things to the kid. The kid done shut down. You done lost him. Why did you lose him? It's because of you. You weren't prepared. How you going to push something on the kid and try to make the kid be a certain way when you didn't do your due diligence to be a better coach so you can successfully push this kid along and help him get where he's going the correct way? So, yeah.
Nah, man, I mean, even plyometrics, I mean, that's one of the –
You got to study those.
Plyometrics and medicine balls are definitely underused. In most programmings, especially like high school, next to none. But most programming people are using med balls and what did I just say? I went blank.
Plyometrics.
Med balls and plyometrics are definitely underused. I mean, everybody started with the basics. You know, we're gonna do jump off the box. But you know, that's even something I'm reading a book. Applied. I think it's called Applied Sprint Training by James Smith. Learning more about plyometrics and things like that, because I mean that's something that I'm now getting deeper into is studying that.
So you got to understand the volume, then you got to understand the intensity level of it. Like you say, them level one, two, three. Some people you'll see, like you'll go on Instagram, you'll see a guy step off a box and then jump. Like, oh man, yeah, that's it. Let's go do it. And that'd be their day one plows. That's a level three. Mm-hmm. That's actually a plow. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. The real, I guess, definition of what we call a plow. You have your jumps and power development leading up to that. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So you have to understand you got to do maybe hurdle hops or single leg mini hurdle hops, whether it's stick, whether it's continuous. You know what I'm saying? Then you have to play with broad jumps or you got to play with the bounds. You got to watch the distance of the bounds. So it's a different intensity of the plow. So you got to know what fall in what category and you have to build accordingly. And you have to watch the volume.
Mm-hmm.
Like some people come in and do five different plow exercise with five sets of five reps. Like you're going to have your knees going to start bothering you, man.
Mm-hmm.
Like you really got to understand what you're doing. And a lot of time on social media, they're not certified and they haven't really done their work. They just want to train kids and help. That's good.
Mm-hmm.
That's not bad at all. But study what you're doing so the kids can be safe. Because if I'm a trainer and I'm, you know, just an independent trainer, you come to train and your kid is hurt, he's not coming back. That parent gonna spread the news like, man, I took my kid over there. Yeah. He got hurt.
Yeah, to me, I mean, even with independent training and private coaching. So I'll say this, like the way I structure my business now is I require everybody to buy, like we do package deals. So you basically committing to 4 weeks, 8 weeks, whatever. It's the way I do it. The reason I do that is because going into the I see you one time, or I might see you two times for a month or for the year. I just feel like one was just unsafe. And then two, I'm not giving myself enough time to test, one, evaluate, two, and then start applying. So if I bring a kid in that I've never seen a day in my life, we've never maxed out, we've never done, I don't know anything about you. And I say, hey, man, all right, first day, I'm going to give you this workout. I'm going to write this program up for you, and we're going to just do it. I feel like that's running a risk, actually running a high risk of like either I may injure you or I'm going to hinder your athletic peaking or athletic trend, you know, by just doing that. So I'd rather just be with you and say, hey, I'm going to be with you for this long and we're going to go at it this way in this process versus just seeing you one, two times and just throwing stuff at you and saying, oh, yeah, I made you better for the day.
So you like to max out before you start?
No.
Okay.
Me, when I say max out for me, I really don't even like, I don't even like a true max. I mean, honestly, I mean, I like to do, let's say 135, 185, 225 bench sets and say, let's get a number of reps and then go from there. That's me personally.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not against, you know, getting absolute maxes, but for younger kids, it's just hard to, get.
Nah, I wouldn't imagine. I'm going to quit because,
one, it's either I'm going to tax you before you get there, or we're just going to run the risk of either the form looks ugly trying to get there. I really don't feel like it's that important. And then on top of that, like they're athletes. I mean, we in powerlifting. I mean, so.
Yeah, I started off, like you said, let's say we got a decent high school kid.
Mm-hmm.
I go 135, 155, You know, I see what the bar look like. If it's moving, if it's starting to slow down, then we'll probably stay right there in however many sets and reps we got right there. Play with that. That'll be week one. You know, week two, you know, 135, 155. Now I'm gonna see what that 155 look like week two. Now I might go, you know, 165, 175. Mm-hmm. All right, cool. Now it's slowing down a little bit. Cool. Now we'll repeat the cycle.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just progressively climb like that. So if I got 8 weeks, then, you know, same concept. You know, you have a deload week, whatnot. Then, you know, as you're getting up, your volume going down. So now you probably be into some ones, you know. So now I get a soft max. So my one, let's say I made it up to 225, 235. Now I know it's moving a little bit, but it's not moving. So
yeah.
I play a little bit down, just get a soft one rep. And I go from there.
Let me ask you this.
I'm not going to push and get the max because, like you said, you're an athlete. And in the high school said, I'm not really, you know what I'm saying, trying to, to get that real max because you might hurt him. So I'm okay with that because, like, this is just me. Now, it's not everybody. Yeah. Like, some guys get too into the strength and conditioning, feel like the weight room, that's what you got to do. That's where we're going to win. And they'll neglect outside. Mm-hmm. You play outside.
Yeah.
You're not, like I said earlier, you're not a bodybuilder. You play outside. You have to be moving good out there and enhance his skill out there with his movement. This is going to help out there because you're going to be able to put more force in the ground to get faster and move the way you need to move. But if he can't get the angles outside and get feet work right, it don't matter. You can't stop. It don't matter. So I'm going to get a number, and he'll be fine with the weight room. For me, the weight room helps with injury prevention. But for me, maybe because I'm a speed guy and I like to run, there is my number one priority. That's it. So we're going to get these things in here. I'm not finna push that. Oh, we got to make sure these numbers, got to get these numbers. Like now they're in college. Now we got to make sure we have a certain number. And we still play with softmax because once again, they get hurt. It's our job. So you have to do it safely if you want to get that number. You know?
Let me ask you this. At the high school level, do you think coaches spend enough time all right, let's say an athlete gets a new max. Do you think there's enough time spent at adjusting to that max? All right, let's say a kid come in, right, and he goes from a 250-pound bench press to a 300-pound bench press. Do you think the coach spent enough time sustaining that new number, or you think they just go right into working that number? I don't know if the way I worded that makes sense.
If I know that number is 300, I'm high school now. Like I say, there's people listening to this be like, man, he's an idiot. But I'm talking about safety and what I consider is important. But I know that number is 300. So you can try to go get that percentage, but you got to get a training max. Like you got to be able to work out that max. You got to get a training max. So now I'm going to work back toward that number. And I might even pass that number depending on how everything go. When I circle back around and redo, you know, climb your next 8 weeks if you're in the summer. So will I stress if I get only to that number? I have to look and see what went wrong. But if you're in high school, it's too many kids.
Yeah.
A lot of things could have went wrong.
Yeah.
But I'm okay because I got back to that number. I'm okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to be, oh, man, I'm okay.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, just me, I'm more concerned about outside. What did he do outside?
Yeah.
Now, of course, I want to get that number past that. But they're high school kids. Are they eating? Are they even getting 3 hours of sleep? Did they stay up all night playing? There's a lot of factors that lead to you not getting that number.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Was that day he stressed? What did you do that week? And you knew you was going to try to get that one, get back to that one for the 300 and pass it.
Mm-hmm.
What did you do that week? The big picture again. It might have been something you did programming.
Right, right, right.
It might have been something he did that day.
Yeah.
He might have been stressed out that day.
Mm-hmm.
So you might, that's why we kind of use the VBT, the perch and things like that. Mm-hmm. It gives you a number to let him know, okay, it tells you he's not there. Then we got force plates. We got all kind of stuff to test if they fatigue or not. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So, but I'm talking college, but high school, you don't have that. So I'm okay if I don't hit that number.
Yeah.
As long as I get back to that number, you probably will pass it.
Yeah. Cause I mean, I just say, like, my train of thought on it is if the kid establishes a new max, you go from that 250, you go to that 300. I'm not about to come the next week and start working the percentages of 300. In my opinion.
Yeah.
I could be wrong on that, but I would work up to it. But I'm not going to say, hey, man, yeah, you just hit 300 last week. Let's start working 70% max of 300, and I want you to give me six reps of that. I'm going to say, all right, let's go let's take about 280 or something like that. And let's work the percentage of that. And then, like you said, I'll try to work up and get past it. But I'm not going to – and I go through a series of, like, ISO holds and things like that in order to try to get you stronger without, again, taxing the joints in that process, always having to attack the central nervous system. Now, we're going to prepare it and get it firing, but I don't have to tax it every time you come to the weight room. And then doing things like using the plyometrics, using the med balls, using everything I got in my toolkit to get you past that number and be stronger and more efficient once we if we were to do that number again, let's say in 2 months, 2 or 3 months.
Yeah. So yeah, so you come back off that 65%, which would be more than your first phase, 65.
Mm-hmm.
And you just kind of watch it. But like I say, that's the ideal setting. You talking kind of from a one-on-one kind of deal or a small group. But high school, you have so many, it's gonna be hard.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's why I say in high school, like, don't get too caught up on the numbers,
right?
Because it's hard. Shit, it's hard on the collegiate level.
Yeah.
You really got to be documenting, and you know, I mean, it's hard. Mm-hmm. So like high school is super hard. So like I say, you got to move the ego. You got to have an understanding, knowledge, and experience. Like I'm able to sit here and say what I'm saying about high school from my experience and knowledge. Like get them stronger, yes. Don't get them weaker, but get them stronger. Understand there's only so much you're going to be able to do in high school.
Mm-hmm.
Your big boys got to be somewhat strong. You understand?
Right.
But most high school teams don't have a weight room program.
Right.
It's called a spade a spade. Yep. Starver High got a weight room program. You know, Tupelo had a weight. Sopinola had one. I came through, and you could tell the difference. But every program don't have a weight room program. So get my guys stronger and better with lifting, then I will have the advantage. You see what I'm saying? Because they're not lifting.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? They're probably not even living life right. And we can get ours to live life a little better, which is, you know, your high school, you may provide the sandwiches, you know, for when they dare to chocolate milk because you don't have the money to buy muscle milk. You try to do little things to get the advantage and get recovery as much as you can, but you can't really stress it unless you take a guy and you really have a strength and conditioning coach certified, then that's a different story.
Yep.
But if you got a D-line coach that's just like weight room, and he try to read these things, but can't comprehend kind of like what we're saying, like you may not get there. Why? Because there's too many factors. He may not understand the factors. He might understand the stress that stress at home puts on your body.
Mm-hmm.
It's a reason why 225 today don't feel the same as 225 next Thursday.
Wednesday.
So you may do the same 225 Wednesday and it feel heavier.
Mm-hmm.
It's a reason why you stress. It's different things going on that make that weight feel the same. I mean, feel different. You see what I'm saying? So that's what I'm trying to say.
No, you absolutely. I mean, I say the same thing with Max. You know, I know that the GPSs are starting to get more popular now, but I say the same thing with Max Speed. Now, we may meet a fork in the road on this, right? So I say Max Speed, if I'm looking at a player's in-game Max Speed, let's say I look at a DB using Max Speed. A DB who knows, we talked about this earlier, a DB who has high IQ, he knows what he's doing. Like let's say he knows his coverage, he knows what's happening in front of him. He probably will rarely ever hit maximum speed in a game unless he got burned on a play or he got lost on a play and he's trying to come back and recover and gain where he's at. Now, offense, that's different. This guy may have caught a slant route and about to hit his head on goal post, about to crib that thing, whatever. But from a defensive perspective, we probably lost in the sauce or whatever. Now, I'm not saying D-lineman because D-lineman, you got to use what you got. But as from a DB perspective or safety coming over top, now you're going to get top speed there. But for the most part, it's a lot of sub-max speed hit more than max pure max speed on each and every play.
No, you can't hit max speed.
Or not each and every play, but most of your plays.
Yeah, because football, you have to read stuff. So, no, they're not going to. We looked at it because we had a conversation just with our sports science department at Oregon. I always talking with them. I always gain it. Like I say, you got to talk to people
and get
knowledge. So, we're going to chase max speed in training. We're going to get that thing as high as we can get.
No doubt.
So, in the game, the only time you're not going to hit max speed in the game, the only time you're going to hit close to 90% and things like that, like you said, if it's a big play. Or a DB got burned and you're going to chase some.
Right.
That's when you hit it. But most of the time, you're going to play. I think when we looked at it, even with our guys, they was fast as all outdoors, man. So they still play roughly around 19 to 20 miles per hour.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So, but how we approached it with that, we don't hit that top speed, but we hammer acceleration. because football is a celebration. So my emphasis went to what's important. Like year one,
mm-hmm.
all of it was important.
Mm-hmm.
Year two, our speed was there. So it's like, okay, we can stop chasing the miles per hour.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we still end up there. I took the focus to acceleration because the game is being right here, 0 to 5, 0 to 10, because your football is played in a 10-yard box.
Yeah.
So that's what my whole thing became.
And when you said that, you know, y'all established that new norm at being at 19, playing at 19, 20 miles per hour, well, you just, because you worked on your acceleration so much, you just established that new max. And so you get used to playing in that zone, then we don't, like you said, we don't have to go and completely max out every time.
Yeah.
But if I need it, I got it in the tank because I worked on that as well.
So in order to keep it, when we don't hit it in games, some games it just played a certain way. You don't hit some games with a fast game, some games with a slow game.
Mm-hmm.
So when we don't hit it, you got 7 days. You got to hit that 90% in 7 days to keep it,
mm-hmm.
right? So when we don't hit it in the game, we got the GPS. So you have to hit your 90% in 6 days. So
mm-hmm.
what we do in practice, if we're in season, you have a coach has a period called this is our speed period, high speed period.
Yeah.
So that's after we warm up, go through some walkthroughs, and then now we'll line them up, and they have to run across the field and hit the 90%.
Mm-hmm.
And they hit it, we're good. So we got it if we need it in the game. If you don't hit it, you lose it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like your body haven't turned over like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be new to them if you go too long. That's when you tweak something.
Mm-hmm.
So we try to always keep it where they can hit it within 7 days.
Mm-hmm.
That way you prevent the injuries. When they do get in the game, you get burned, you got to go chase them, and you got to pull a hammy.
Yeah. As a parent, you know, what's something you look for in a trainer? If you were to hand your kids over to a performance coach, what would you be looking for?
If they got certifications
mm-hmm.
of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not going to say it don't matter where it's from, but you got to show me that, because I know better, but if I didn't know better, I'm trying to think like that.
Mm-hmm.
I always kind of knew better. But you have to show me that you put some time into studying your craft. Because, like I say, there's a lot of people that go see stuff on internet, do it, but they don't understand what led to that. So
mm-hmm.
if we can call a certain exercise a level 1, 2, or 3, sometime on social media, you see a level 3 exercise,
mm-hmm.
but in that exercise, they don't show you how they got there, or they don't say this is week 8
mm-hmm.
of the program, and that may be appropriate because they led up to that. So when you go out there and start doing those type things, you don't get the result.
Skill stacking.
Yeah.
You're stacking skills because everybody's not prepared to go to that level like that. You know, one thing I say, like I'm working with some of the athletes I just got back, you know, we're doing general physical preparation. Before we get into doing like heavy cutting, heavy change direction, things like that, it's just general
mm-hmm.
prep, like
right.
just getting the body reacclimated because I'm trying to avoid them having like reactive tendinopathy mm-hmm. and things like that. And so, you know, I definitely agree with you on that. That's a big key.
Right.
Let's end this with a fun question. Any advice for anyone who wants to excel or be a leader in that field?
In strength and conditioning? Shoot, man. Find you a mentor that
mm-hmm.
can, you know, because like Coach TJ from Alabama, he's master strength coach, he retired. Now, he showed me how to be a strength coach. You can read the strength and conditioning Bible, what we call it,
mm-hmm.
and get all that knowledge, but that's just the knowledge. So some people come and coach and talk all sciencey. One, some of the kids you deal with don't really care about the science.
At all.
Just train me. But he showed me how to, like we talk about, look at the athlete, how he feel, where
mm-hmm.
he look. He's an old lineman. He punch all day. His wrist sore. Can't catch the power clean. How you feel with the bench, his shoulders. All right, we might have to change it and use we call it the football bar, where it's more neutral.
Yeah,
right. So it's just being able to meet the athlete, I guess you can say, where he's at, and just understand that is sometimes you have to know when to abort the mission, different
mm-hmm.
things like that. But I think the important part is to find somebody that can mentor you, that has the experience and been through what you're trying to get ready to go through. That makes sense.
Yeah, I definitely agree. When I first started strength coaching.
And you also still have to be coachable.
Mm-hmm.
Like sometimes you may have what you think you know. All right, but do you have experience? All right, that's the one question too. Versus a person that has experience, he may be telling you something and doing something. Like I seen it, because I started off an intern. Mm-hmm. Interns come in, they read the book, they certified, may have their master, but they haven't done it for mm-hmm. real. Like, why are we doing that? This and that and that. And like, I'll do this, this and that. But it's like, that's the wrong thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Shut up. Just listen and see it through. Because I did that a mm-hmm. little bit. But like I say, once TJ took me on his wing, I shut my mouth and I started seeing it from week one to week four.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, oh, because I didn't know where we was going.
Right.
I didn't see the whole program. So I'm just looking at the current space where I'm at. So just be quiet and be coachable.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? But you got to find some good mentors to get under and listen,
yep.
you know, and study and listen, study and listen. My son was my guinea pig.
Mm-hmm.
So I tried things and and I learned a lot from that too. So just setting up, man, and finding a mentor and listen.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not an easy industry. It's a stressful industry, to be honest with you. Because up here, especially with football,
mm-hmm.
It's a year round, 365. You're either going to go from 5 days a week to 7 days a week, and that's it year round. And you're going to have a small block where you're off. But also being able to structure when you leave here time for your family.
Right.
You know what I mean? I think that's the hardest part because you'll look up, time will fly. I was blessed to move from schools that practice at night to schools that practice in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
So for my son to finish his last 2 years, I was able to watch him practice because mm-hmm. I wouldn't see games because we're gone.
Yep.
So, you know, it's you know, I know I'm going on and now I should shut up now. But
no, you good.
Find your mentor, man, study, and be a student of the game. But that's the same for anything,
mm-hmm.
whether you want to be an auto mechanic, whether you want to be an accountant, it don't matter. You got to be a student of the game.
Yeah, I think, like I said, I definitely agree with you. I think, I know when I first started performance coaching, first thing I did was I talked to this guy named Rob Barnes. He's gone now, he's passed away, but he had been doing performance coaching since the 70s at that time. This was 2014, 2015. And he taught me a lot, and I would go and watch his training sessions, ask him why he's doing this with the athlete. This is before I even trained my first athlete. Mm-hmm. And then it was just certain things that worked for him that didn't work for me. And then certain things I would like listen to and then apply. And then just like I'm doing now, talking to coaches and getting those circles and just asking, you know, well, what are you looking at? You know, what is realistic when this athlete first starts? What's realistic when they end? How do we get them to peak going into fall camp? One thing that you talked about was, you know, level one, level two, level three. You know, I think that whenever you first get into coaching, one thing that a lot of coaches make the mistake of is starting at level two, level three, and they never prepare the athlete for level one. And then when you get to a point and you see this is when you start getting exposed, when you say, well, I need you to do a simple task. I need you to do a simple drill, and the athlete's not able to accomplish it. But they can do 100 ladder drills and variations, 1,000 variations of high level skill stuff. And so I think just learning how to skill stack, learning how to program has been the biggest thing that's helped me as far as coaching. And then it's just applying that and always learning what's new. Yeah. I took a year off from training, and then that year off from training and coming back, I felt like I knew nothing.
Yeah.
Like it was so much to change, so much new research and things like that.
But you just do simple better because the speed ladder would be got me sitting here like, wait, you said that doing all these different variations of speed ladder.
Mm-hmm.
I see sometime on social media, you got a 10-year-old, let's say, speed ladder 2-in, right?
Mm-hmm.
2-in. Then all of a sudden you see that 10-year-old doing 2-in and put a combine in, out,
yeah,
out.
Like, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it looked like trash.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, you got to understand kids and the level of progression with their motor skills and their abilities. So if you get this kid that's starting to put these patterns together and never done it, do simple better. Let's get good at the end, the 2-in.
2-in, yeah.
Let's get better with that before we add combine another mm-hmm. movement with it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So just do simple better, because at 10, you're fine with just doing, we'll say if it's linear day, doing the four linear ones.
Mm-hmm.
If it's COD day, you know, you might do lateral runs on mm-hmm. it, lateral in and out ski, what you call it, the ski switch, or mm-hmm. they got all kind of different names for it, moving lateral. Just keep it simple. If you keep it simple, now you got somewhere to go when Then you done had them for 8 weeks. Mm-hmm. Now they go play their sports. They come back. Now you can save that for the next block mm-hmm. or the next phase. Mm-hmm. But people try to advance so far, and because they think it looked good, but that athlete never got competent with the basic movement mm-hmm. before you add all this other stuff in. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, you got to control, you got to program how to move. You got to take the brain, take the body, put them together and truly understand and build coordination. Kids are not coordinated because they can't take the nervous system and take the muscular system and tie them together. Mm. See what I'm saying? Now, once you can do that simple, they get better at it. You know, open that pathway up. Now you can start getting into all this. So you did this and then you did this. Now put it together. You're going to get better results. So just do simple better. Mm-hmm. And then you leave somewhere to go because it's only so far you can go.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So I done did everything you can possibly do in 8 weeks.
Yeah.
You done went. If you're training the kid, you done ran yourself out of a job.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, you know what I mean?
Yeah, now I gotta do something that don't even apply.
There you go.
Something that ain't transferable.
Now if you're a parent, like, what are they doing? Why are they doing that? Now I don't want to pay you no more.
You're right. Yeah, I got you hitting front flips off the bleachers. just because. But yeah, I definitely agree with that. And Coach, man, I appreciate the time.
That's it. That's all you got.
That's it, man. Oh, man. That's all I got, man. Like, what got you into it? What got you?
Man, you see. I'm from Starkville, right?
So, oh, yeah, I already know. I got it wrote down right here.
So it's not a lot going on in Starkville, right? So mm-hmm. we get in different situations, you get different opportunities to make bad decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Made my share of bad decisions, man. So ended up going to Hines first. We left Hines. We went to Hines just to party.
Because mm-hmm.
In high school, I had ACL my last year. I didn't believe my English teacher. Just said, if I don't do a term paper, I'm not gonna pass my English.
Right.
So I'm looking at my grades, like, my grade's good, I should be. Mm-hmm. What you talking about, lady? I can get away with this. Back then, I could be on average.
Yeah.
I didn't realize how much that term paper
weighed. Yeah, how much that.
So, end up not doing the term paper, failed the 11th grade English. Lucky for us in Starkville, we had started the college, this block system, mm-hmm. which is semesters, right? So, I was able to graduate on time because I had to take 2 English.
Right.
My last semester, my last year, just to be able to graduate on time.
Mm-hmm.
So did that, messed around. So I lost my last year of football, right? So I ended up going to Hines, going to school. Mm-hmm. Just gonna do baseball. I like baseball, played that. So went there, enjoyed school. Like, man, forget all that. I'm just gonna be a student. Whatever. Then we end up transferring to East Mississippi. Mm-hmm. So me and my partner, we knew, man, we're going to go down here and have a good time. We're going to stay in classes long enough to stay in the dorms.
Yeah.
Did that with Drew. He went home, went to work. I went to school.
Mm-hmm.
And I did the football thing down there. I tried to, you know, do that.
Right.
Tore my ACL. So then after that, it was like, shoot, all right. Got kicked out of school for a situation. So you can either get kicked out or don't return.
Right.
So I chose not to return. So end up coming to Mississippi State, taking classes, going through that process or whatever, doing what you do locally. Then there's like, got a letter, email saying, have you registered to graduate?
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I'm finna graduate. So boom, did that. They said, you gotta do an intern. Came over here, Coach Kroon had just got hired in that December. So my advisor was like, go see it. I was in kinesiology.
Right.
Well, it was fitness manager back then. Then everything switched to kinesiology. So it's like, go see the strength coach. And see if you can get an intern. When he did the intern, fell in love with it, which here at Mississippi State, no weight room.
Mm-hmm.
Fell in love with it. That's what I wanted to do. But I got married, had a kid, so I couldn't GA. So ended up going to personal training. Didn't like that because coming for training athletes to get ready for something. And got
that's a different word.
Right. Then got a housewife. They dressed up, got the makeup on, sweat.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, that wasn't the thing to do.
Yeah.
So I ran across Velocity Sports Performance. It's a speed franchise.
Yeah, it was 0506 right there.
Right, it was Velocity. Then it was, back then it was Athletes Performance, mm-hmm. which is now Exos.
Right.
So did that, fell in love with the speed stuff, man. Was like, okay, I want to go to the high school level and train high school athletes, mm-hmm. be 4-5 stars, and go away with scholarships, blah, blah, blah. Didn't quite work like that.
You know,
a young guy in the industry, not many high school coaches are willing to say, huh, go do the weight room.
Exactly.
Go do speed.
Exactly.
So end up getting into meeting the guy. I still coached it, but he just gave me small leeway. So I ended up coaching football.
Mm-hmm.
So gave me a small leeway with coaching DBs, of course. So I started coaching track. Met a track guy down at Hancock County High School, and he ran track at Southern Miss. He was like, man, we started talking about speed, mm-hmm. talking about this drill, that drill, this technique, that technique. Mm-hmm. Like, man, you know what you're talking about, so I need some help. You want to coach the sprinters?
Yeah.
Because he was like a mid, long sprinter, like 400, mm-hmm. 800 guy. I was like, cool. Did that, fell in love with the speed part of training track, stopped football, got into track, whatnot, man. So just went through that avenue from just doing the intern, learning what, and just mm-hmm. fell in love with it. So I got into it. I was like, then I went back home, had another child, had my daughter. So I'm like, I got to get out of the high school setting. I can't. Right. I don't want to teach. I'm more of a disciplinarian. Like, teacher tell me what he's not doing.
Right.
I go get him. Hey, mm-hmm. you're going to do this or else. Because I always could get relationship with kids and get them to see the big picture.
Right.
And get them to kind of going in a better direction.
Yeah.
Without all the way, because I was one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said earlier.
Yeah,
I
didn't, it was easy to get them to buy in.
Right.
What, well,
because I lost my eligibility because
mm-hmm.
I didn't do what I was supposed to do. I didn't have a reason why I didn't do the term paper. You know, in the grand scheme of thing on the back end, I now understand what that process had was mm-hmm. for, is to get me to the point, to get me to here, to be able to, because you're going to see it year in, year out,
yeah.
you know, with kids. So I'd have been there and I could speak from a certain standpoint
because
mm-hmm. I have the experience. But end up, my wife, I can't make six figures doing this. This is, I don't want to be, I'm not going to get this test, be mm-hmm. all this certification.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot.
Well, I'm not trying to teach school.
Yeah.
I'm not a teacher. I'm a coach, but I'm not mm-hmm. a teacher. But anyway, he ended up coming back to start for doing track. We start back sprint. Our school didn't sprint. We had I forgot the boy's name now. Russell. I think his last name was Russell. 400 runner here,
mm-hmm.
like top runner in the state. So Starford wasn't sprinting since he left. Got an opportunity to train a kid. He got better winning watch practice. They asked me, hey, you want to coach track again
yep.
up here? Did that, had success. Once again, can't make money. So I ended up going to Alabama. At 31, maybe,
mm-hmm.
did an intern and fell in love with it again. First year, did it for free. Second year, got hired.
Yeah.
Then after the second year, got the head gig at Grambling and just kind of
mm-hmm.
been taking off from there.